Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Hi, and welcome to A Taste of the Past. I'm Linda Palacio, your host here on Heritage Radio Network, and today's show is being sponsored by Hearst Ranch. Hearst Ranch is the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. Since 1865, the Hearst family has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of the Central California coast. The result is beef with extraordinary flavor that's as memorable and natural as the surrounding landscape. For more information, go to HearstRanch.com. Well, today, you have to indulge me. today our topic is one that I couldn't get it out of my head. I went out to South Bend, Indiana, to visit relatives and to go to my husband's alma mater, Notre Dame. And of course, we had to go to the first football game. I did not. I partook in the festivities ahead of time, as many people do, tailgating. Then he went on to the game. And I was just astounded by the growth of this social activity and food activity and wondered, wow, when and how did this all start? So a little digging around, and I was able to scrape up some history on it. You know, piecing things together, it's a little sketchy, but I did found some good information in a book by Stephen Lynn called The Ultimate Tailgater's Handbook. And according to most historians, they feel that tailgating began really at the first intercollegiate football game. Big surprise, right? And that was between Rutgers and Princeton in 1869. I mean, football was actually, football was being played in the 1820s or forms of it, but not intercollegiate. So, and then there are some people who think that maybe it had precursors. In particular, 1861, there was the Battle of Bull Run, and they say that enthusiastic Union supporters from Washington, D.C. area arrived with baskets of food and shouts of, go Big Blue. they watched the opening battle of the American Civil War. Well, I don't know if this was actually the case, but historians do agree that it was a case of the right idea at the wrong time. I mean, war is not a spectator sport. Still, there was that socializing tradition and that tension and excitement that just gets people all whipped up, and food becomes part of it. So then we get onto the football end of it, and, you know, need I say more? You know the rivalries. But then there was another historical event that I think we owe a lot to, and that has been documented. And that is the invention of the first chuck wagon. And that was a rolling chow haul for cowboys, really. And it was an old U.S. Army Studebaker wagon that the first chuck wagon was built into. Not a whole lot different than what a lot of these tailgating wagons are today. Of course, then we had the advent of station wagons, and station wagons had the back tailgate that came down there. We got our name tailgating from the station wagons. Also gave them a name and a platform, literally a platform for all this food. So all the coolers and then the portable grills, gas grills came into play. It just, the event grew and grew. To the point where there are stores that sell tailgating equipment. A grill and cooler tailgate set for about $3,000 has been documented for sale, I think, at Hummacher Schlemmer. And, of course, then there's the parking pass that you have to pay for and the tickets to the game. Although, today there are satellite hookups for generator and generators to run electricity, to run these big flat screen televisions. And people sit back, tailgate, eat and drink. They set up 2 days in advance for some of these events. And a survey found that only 30% of tailgaters set foot in a stadium. Never set foot in a stadium. 30% never set foot in the stadium. They're just having too much fun partying. But, tailgating grew from football to car races to rock concerts. In fact, NASCAR now leads the nation in the numbers of tailgaters. And the recipes, the food is more elaborate than one can imagine. People plug in ovens and grills and crock pots and serving trays. There are table linens and candles and, cakes in the shapes of race cars and footballs. It's astounding, the amount of food and, need I say, the drink. And in fact, the Southern Heritage Classic at the Liberty Bowl in Memphis that just took place, they have adapted the parking lot there, the actual tailgating parking lot. They've turned it into a full-fledged tailgating parking lot. And they have electrical hookups at every parking place for people that can plug in all their apparatus. And there are tailgating magazines and tailgating clubs. It's fun. Who doesn't love a party, right? I counted, when I was trying to do some research on tailgating recipes, I counted over 39 cookbooks about tailgating. And that doesn't count the little community cookbooks or the cookbooks put out by specific schools and clubs, the little local ones like Michigan University's tailgating cookbook or the NFL cookbooks. Well, actually, NFL announcer John Madden wrote his own cookbook for tailgating, and Mario Batali wrote a cookbook for tailgating. But we also have with us here today another food writer, journalist, and cookbook author who wrote a couple of cookbooks that could be considered tailgating, and one that was actually the Tailgater's Cookbook. Dave Joachim. Did I say that right? Joachim. Dave Joachim. I'm sorry. Dave, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
At that lengthy history and intro. Dave, you have written a lot of different cookbooks, and I think what kind of put you on the map with the whole tailgating and grilling thing was A Man and a Can and a Plan, right?
Right, and I wrote A Man, a Can, a Grill, which is another good tailgating book. I've written a few books that are focused on grilling, which I think is the core of tailgating, honestly.
Yeah, I think you're right, yeah.
And that book just allows it to be done easily, because that's the difficult part of tailgating. You think, well, I have to not only cook this food, but I have to get it all there, I have to bring the equipment, I have to do the cleanup, and that book just makes it a little easier, because you're just grabbing a couple of cans of this, and often the recipes start with a can of beer and do something with it, so it just makes the whole tailgating experience a little more fun,
which
is what it's supposed to be.
Absolutely, and it is fun. Oh, are you kidding me? I love going and walking around and looking at all of the astounding spreads that are out there. What got you to write the actual Tailgater's Cookbook?
Well, the Tailgater's Cookbook just grew out of my love of grilling and obviously tailgating, just going to games. And I think outside of grilling food in a parking lot, the real attraction to tailgating is where else, particularly in America. This is a very American phenomenon.
That's what I was going to say. If we search for American cuisine, this is it. This is all American cuisine.
Exactly. And where else in America can you get together with, in some cases, 100,000 people, all there for the same purpose? It's like, I mean, you can't do this anymore. The community centers and the town squares, these sorts of things are disappearing, so it's much more difficult to get together with large groups of people. And if you can imagine your backyard barbecue just expanding to the nth degree.
Unbelievable, yes.
That's the feeling you get, like you say, when you walk through the different tailgates and see the amazing spreads that people have. And one of the best things to do is bring a little extra of whatever you're making. And bring, let's say you have some spiced nuts or something. I have a recipe in the Tailgater's Cookbook for chipotle pecans. Very simple to make. You just toss some pecans with a little bit of chipotle and some sugar, and it caramelizes. Anyway, it's a great little snack. You can carry this throughout your tour of the tailgates near you, and when you offer food to other people, they invariably invite you into their party. You meet someone you'd never met before. You strike up a conversation. You find these similarities between you, and that's the core of tailgating.
You're right.
This communal experience.
It's a wonderful social tradition. It really is. It's great. And you're so right. I've never walked by someone else's tailgate party or the back of their truck, their tailgate, and not been offered something.
Right.
You know, a beer or you know, some chips or cookies. Or I mean, there's always something to eat. But the grilling, well, it was, you know, chili and hot dogs. Of course, you know, in the 1800s, we were starting out with picnic baskets of, you know, whatever foods they would make. But now, boy, you can have everything warmed up and kept cold, or, you know, the sky's the limit, really.
It really is. There's no limit to what you can do. I mean, I've been at a New York Giants game where mobile pizza ovens are trucked in. I've been at Eagles games in Philadelphia with ice blocks of fish that are freshly sliced, fresh salmon, sashimi sliced from a huge ice block. It's just incredible, the expense that people will go to, first of all, but just the size, too, the size of the parties that people put on is astounding and so fun to be a part of.
That's right.
It's terrific.
I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, one of the real fun things I did when I went to a Gators game, I go see the Florida Gators at least once a year, and they, by the way, have the biggest tailgate, billed as the world's largest cocktail party at the annual Florida-Georgia game in Jacksonville. And that gets about 100,000 people. But I was going down for a different Gators game, and I brought 40 pounds of pork shoulder in my carry-on bag in the plane. And you can imagine the security.
What is this?
Right. It didn't break any rules. You know, it wasn't sharp. It wasn't flammable. You know, I brought all of this pork shoulder down to the tailgate. And just telling that story at the tailgate with everyone there enjoying the pulled pork barbecue sandwiches made it so fun.
It's amazing. And when you said the expense and the elaborateness, some of the stage, I was reading about this. Well, of course, there are traditions south and north, too. You know, as much as the rivalry of the sports teams, there are the rivalry of the tailgate dishes. And I was reading about the Southern Heritage Classic in Memphis, and I was astounded. They opened the gates for setup at 8 a.m. on Thursday. The game was not until Saturday at about 6 p.m. I mean, these people were serious. They had serious setup, and they were doing some serious partying, I would imagine, too.
Yeah, well, at NASCAR, it goes even further back. They'll set up almost a week in advance.
Wow.
And many people will come in an RV, and essentially, it's a vacation.
Yeah.
They make a vacation out of the entire week, getting to know everybody, walking around the tailgate, hosting parties, celebrating their favorite drivers. It's something you can't get anywhere else.
I mean, these are diehard fans, you think of it. I mean, and I was really surprised to learn that NASCAR leads the nation in the number of tailgaters. I mean,
yeah.
And their club, the tailgating clubs that exist. What a fun thing, you know.
And the American Tailgate Association is trying to track just how many tailgaters there are. And their estimates are that there are about 23 million annual tailgaters, including all sports, NFL, college, NASCAR. It goes up. It's just it's unbelievable how big it is. But, you know, it shows that people are yearning for this type of activity.
It's I mean, it's certainly not something that anyone wants to squelch, because it is. There's never been, to my, my experience, I'm sure there have been, but everyone's always there just for a good time. There are no problems, there are no bad breakouts. They're just there to celebrate their team, celebrate the season. I mean, autumn, what a great, usually it's in, well, of course, NASCAR spans all seasons.
Yeah.
But it's there for a celebration, and it's all about food. Food and drink, you know.
It is. And even though some of the spreads can get really big and people get as competitive with tailgating as they do with sports, you can have an amazing tailgate without all of that, the bigness of it. You can keep it simple. And I try to tell people to just do what you know, because you don't want something to fail. It's like when you're hosting a dinner party. Don't ever make a recipe you haven't made before. It's like that with tailgating. Plan ahead, make as much food ahead as you can, keep the menu simple, and keep it fun. Right. And there are lots of, the Tailgater's Cookbook has recipes in it that are designed to do that. They're not too elaborate. One of my favorite ones is the beer and coffee steaks.
Mm.
Everyone loves it.
Interesting.
Beer and coffee. I mean, do you marinate the game?
Do you marinate the steaks in the beer and the coffee?
So the recipe is pretty simple. The night before you're going to go to your tailgate, you drop some strip steaks or ribeyes or whatever you like into a Ziploc bag with some dark beer, like a Negro Modelo or dark porter or something like that, a little Worcestershire sauce, some Tabasco, and then you let that marinate overnight, and then the next morning you put on a rub of ground coffee, just ground, regular ground coffee, a little bit of chili powder. I like to use ancho chili powder, cumin, sugar, a little cayenne, salt, and pepper. And you put that rub on the steaks and throw it back into a clean Ziploc bag, put it in your cooler, and then when you get there, you just grill them. A little pat of butter on the top, maybe, to finish it off.
Nice and neat.
And it's just easy. I mean, people love that. The taste is very robust. So that's always a hit at tailgates, and there are lots of other recipes.
Your book has been called the go-to guide for tailgaters, which I think is a nice honor to have. With checklists and things. And if you can stick around, we have to take a short break. Can you stick around and join us in another couple minutes and talk about some of these recipes? You have a couple of other really great recipes in here.
I can talk about.
All right, we'll take a short break, and we'll be right back with David Jockum. Hi, we're back here on A Taste of the Past talking with Dave Jockum, and we have him on the phone because actually, Dave, you're teaching at the Greenbrier, at the Food Writers Symposium, the Professional Food Writers Symposium,
yes,
at the Greenbrier, right?
Yes, I reside in Pennsylvania, but I'm currently in West Virginia right now with food writers discussing how to what we do and how to do it better.
Anyone writing about tailgating? Well, this is a fun topic to write about, certainly, and that's what we've been talking about. We've been talking about tailgating, and I wanted to ask you, first of all, is there any one experience that stands out to you in terms of the tailgating that you've seen that was the most outlandish spread or most unusual set up, anything in particular that caught your attention, you remember?
Well, the salmon that I mentioned, I think, was the most unusual because, like I said, the core of tailgating is grilling. It really does stem back to gathering around the fire with people, and you can go back as far back as you want to go with that.
Mm-hmm.
But that is what anchors the soul of tailgating. And this was so unusual because it was doing the same thing, but there was no heat. It wasn't cooking anything. This was sashimi. It was raw fish.
So they were just big blocks of ice with the raw fish
right.
on them?
Wow. But it made the same impression. It drew people together in the same way that, say, a grill fire would.
Uh-huh.
So I think that left the biggest impression on me because it had the same effect. But, you know, it was fish, and it was unusual for a tailgate. You've got beef and pork and these like robust manly flavors, and this was like a light, delicate fish, and it still connected with everyone at the tailgate, which was just it was fun to watch that. So,
yeah. Well, it's also fun to see some real American classics reemerge, like deviled eggs. Somehow, deviled eggs always reemerge at a tailgate party.
They are making a comeback. It's
yeah.
true. Despite the egg scare, they're still making a comeback.
Oh, you have some. Well, you have a couple of interesting things in the book too. That some, of course, are take their roots in certain teams. What comes to mind right away, of course, is Buckeye candy for all the Ohio State University Buckeye fans. What's this Buckeye candy?
Buckeye candy is kind of like a Reese's peanut butter cup. But it's done the way that they want, how they want to do it in Ohio to honor their team. I first learned about this recipe from Becky Barker. She's someone who tailgates at OSU. And she shared her recipe with me, and it's just, it looks like a buckeye.
Mm.
So it's got this, it looks like a deer's eye. That's what it looks like. And it's chocolate wrapped around a core of sugary, creamy peanut butter. And it's absolutely delicious. It keeps well.
What could be bad about that?
Yeah. It's a single serving. You know, have as many as you like. It's easy to carry around and share with people to tailgate. And it also honors the team. So it's very grounded in that tailgating tradition of that team. So
Everyone, I suppose, changes the name of their barbecue. If they brought Texas barbecue sauce with them, and they're not from Texas or not rooting for Texas, they probably change the name of their barbecue sauce.
But,
you mentioned something, and I don't know if you recall. I think it was from your book, and it was a blender blaster.
Blaster? That does not ring a bell.
Okay. Maybe I read that in someone else's book as I was going. Something
this was
about
the plug-in blender?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
That
yeah.
was oh, run by a gas generator or gas-powered?
It's a gas-powered blender. Yes, yes. That is true. It's
I mean, this is innovative, creative invention and thinking for cooking on the go, you know.
Right. I mean, you know that the drinks are a big part of tailgating.
Yes.
And it's expanded way beyond beer to include wine. Also, mm-hmm. and the single-serving plastic bottles of wine have become very popular, in part because of tailgating. But the blender is a way that people are taking their drinks to different places so they can honor the traditions of the food. So, for instance, down in Miami, you might have a mojito.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not blended, but you might have a mojito or another cocktail that's of that region. So I think a lot of people are using these blenders so they can really eat the food of the area. I mean, the local and seasonal movement is applying to tailgating as well.
Right.
And it's something that has been a part of tailgating for a long time, with especially with barbecue traditions, where the barbecue is very different in Texas than it is in Kentucky. And so it's amazing to watch it evolve. For instance, there is now a Ford F-150 tailgate truck that has a built-in grill, two kegs, a DVD, stereo, sink, and one of those blenders.
That's got to be not cheap.
No, at all.
I mean, SUV, the onset of SUVs took up. First, it was in the, you know, 60s, 70s, it was station wagons. And then in the 90s, SUVs. And now we've got full-on decked-out chuck wagons, you're telling me, right?
That's right.
Interesting.
All to make it easier for you to tailgate and more fun. Because, again, carting all the equipment around is one of the problems.
Well, I think I was impressed when I saw the first time I ever saw somebody pull out not just folding chairs, but two full-on armchairs around their flat screen TV. And of course, the generator was making so much noise, the hum of the generator to run all this stuff, that, you know, you're hard pressed to hear what was going on the big screen. But you knew these people were obviously not going to the game. They were sitting right there, and they weren't going to go inside the stadium at all.
Yeah, but that's an interesting statistic you brought up about the 30%
not going
into
right.
the stadium. And it's very plain to see. Many people go without tickets, and they hope to get some.
Right.
And many people go not even wanting to get tickets. They're just there for the tailgating experience. And it's instead of cheering for the team in their living room, they're going to cheer for the team with even more people in the parking lot.
That's right. And for those listeners who maybe never had the opportunity to go to a big lot tailgating party, I mean, these parking lots are, you have the tickets and the parking passes for years, and they stay in the family. I mean, these are things you don't give up, many of them. And people have designated spots, and they have flags that identify where they're going to be. And so every year you know where to go and find Sally and Joe, because they're always in, you know, parking lot number D with aisle 13 with the, you know, the big green flag above it or something. You know, this goes way beyond tradition. This becomes a neighborhood. And
that's
as you're
right.
saying, it's a tradition, it's neighborly, it's, you know, it's social. And there is, I think, as much as the game, the tradition of the competitiveness of the game, there is a lot of competition in the food. And I've seen people walking around eyeing other people's spreads and then coming back and looking at their own and saying, what'll I do next year? There's a lot of competition in that, don't you think?
Absolutely. Yeah. That goes along with the rooting for your team. Often people will bring that into the food by cooking the competition. You know, so if, let's say, your team's playing the Buffalo Bills, you'll put on your menu some Buffalo burgers and then lord That's it cool. over the Bills fans. Oh, yeah, we're going to grill you on the field just like we're grilling you right now on the over the fire. So people do that, and it's fun. And it also shows your team spirit, which is a big part of it.
Up in Vermont, they have polo matches in Manchester, Vermont. And the polo matches, there's a tremendous, that's a more formal tailgating that goes on, I guess you would say there. And they actually have formal judges who judge the best dishes of the tailgating. Now, that might be getting a little far, because it really is all in good spirit, and it's all supposed to be about fun and good food. And back to your book and your recipes, as I say, there were so many good ones that caught my eye. And one of them in particular was a chocolate whiskey pudding, and not to forget championship cookies. That was
yes, those are chocolate chip cookies, but they're taken to the nth degree. There's chocolate, and more chocolate. One of my favorites in the book is a grilled pizza, because it's so surprising to people how good pizza can be when it's grilled. Mm-hmm. And again, I think the grill is really the core, and I try to have at least one grilled item in every tailgate menu, but a maximum of two. You don't want to have too much, because typically, unless you have a massive grill, you just don't have the space for everything.
That's right.
But the pizza is unusual and easy to do, because you can even do this with store-bought dough. You just pat out the dough to a round that's easy to handle, let's say 10 inches in diameter. About 10 inches is good. And then you grill the dough by itself on the grill, and you grill one side and then flip it over, and you put the toppings on that side.
They just melt right away on that hot side, right?
Right. That's so the process is a little different, and it's surprising to your guests. It's an easy pickup food. There are limitless variations on how you can flavor it, and I have a pesto gorgonzola one in the book, which is really flavorful because it has fresh tomatoes, pesto for the sauce on the bottom, and then just a crumble of gorgonzola cheese, and it's a bold flavor. It's unusual for people, and you know, just adds to your enjoyment of the pregame festivities, and it really is all about that.
It's about supporting
the team. That's the history of it.
Yeah, it is. It's and what a great way to do it, with some really, truly great food. Well, I thank you. Anyone who needs a go-to guide for tailgating, this, I think the Tailgater's Cookbook, it's still in print, is it not?
It's
not that old. Yeah, right. And you have a couple of new books. The newest book is the Food Substitutions Bible? Is that
the
newest one?
Yeah, that's right. This just came out. It's the second edition of a book that won an IACP award. It's a culinary organization. So I expanded the book to have 1,500 more substitutions. So now it has 6,500 substitutions, all organized from A to Z, so you can find whatever you're looking for really easily.
So it's really like a dictionary or encyclopedia. I'm going to a recipe and, gee, I don't have any, I don't know, let's say heavy cream. So
right.
What could I do to substitute? And I look up heavy cream.
Yeah. Say cilantro or something like that that you don't like and
right.
you want to replace it, then you will find substitutions for that. And just to mention the other grilling books, I'm working on another grill book that will be out this spring, which is perfect for tailgating, and it's all about grilling things that are unusual, that are a little different. People who like to push their tailgates to the next level and impress their guests, we have grilled beef cheeks, we have other grilled organs and things like that. That's not the entirety of the book, but that's how I think a tailgater would best use that one.
Well, that's something they can look forward to. And Dave Jockum, Dave, you have a website as well. They can watch it on. They can look for that book on your website, right?
Yes.
And
yeah, the website is davejockum.com.
Okay. And so you can go see that, and we'll post that up on our site here as well. So listeners can go to that site and check out when that new book comes out and gain access to the other books that you've written. Well, I thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule there teaching the food writers at the Food Writers Conference, and hope that we'll have an opportunity to speak with you again when your new book comes out.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you, Linda.
Thank you. You've been listening to A Taste of the Past. I'm Linda Palacio. I'd like to thank our sponsor, Hearst Ranch, and, of course, our producer, Jack Inslee, and our engineer, Nat Wiener. And please join us again on A Taste of the Past.
Listeners, we want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awali, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.